from Dr. Burton Clark. Welcome to Leadership on the Line. This program is brought to you by Firehouse.com Radio over the internet and can be downloaded to your iPod. Today's discussion topic is on our fire service safety culture. We have two distinguished panels to talk about this important issue for the next hour. The first group of leaders looks at our safety culture from a national point of view. The second group of leaders have to deal with our safety culture every day from the company level of operations. This is Leadership on the Line, Fire Service Safety Culture. Welcome to the program. It's my honor to introduce our first panel. Dave Paulison is the United States Fire Administrator at the Department of Homeland Security. Dave is retired as Chief of the Miami-Dade County Fire Department in Florida. Also on the first panel is Bob DiPoli, President of the International Association of Fire Chiefs. Bob retired as Chief of the Needham Fire Department in Massachusetts. Next, joining us will be Ron Sarnicky, the Executive Director of the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. Ron retired as Chief of the Prince George's County Fire Department in Maryland. Rounding out the first panel will be Billy Goldfeder. Billy is the Deputy Chief of the Loveland Fire Department in Ohio. Billy also serves as on the Board of Directors of the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. Thank you all for being here. The first question goes to you, Dave. You've been referred to as the President's Fire Chief. Dave, if the President were to ask you, why do so many firefighters get injured and killed in our country, how would you answer him?
Well, let's make no mistake about it. Firefighting is a very physically demanding and very dangerous job. But if we look at the statistics of how our firefighters are dying, we see that most of our firefighters are dying due to heart attacks. And a second cause of death is through vehicle accidents. So we feel like there's two things there that we can have a significant impact on. You know, we're kicking off the stand-down day tomorrow to try to emphasize to all of our firefighters that if they look in the mirror, that's the person most responsible for safety of a firefighter. So what I'm saying, if I told the President, I would say exactly that, that our firefighters are dying because we've got health and wellness issues out there we have to deal with, and also we have vehicle accident issues we have to deal with.
Thanks, Chief. Billy, how do you think Dave's answer was? What do you think of Dave's answer to the President?
Dave's on target. Dave's answer to the President is the same answer we should be giving to our company officers, our firefighters, and chiefs. You know, if we'd eat more salads, exercise, and slow down, we'd solve the problem.
That's great. Bob DiPoli, President of the International Association of Fire Chiefs. The next question is for you, Bob. Should a fire chief be held responsible for a firefighter line of duty death if safety standards were violated?
You know, Bert, I've been a fire chief for a very long time, and the chief of department is ultimately responsible for everything that happens in a department, the good as well as the bad things. The reason today we're calling for this fire safety stand down is it needs to go a lot further than that. It needs to go from the top down and from the bottom up. And if you look at a situation of a firefighter that fails to buckle a seatbelt and going out the door, turning onto the road, falls out of the truck and is killed, the responsibility first began with the firefighter that failed to buckle the seatbelt, and then second and probably more importantly, the company officer that allowed the unit to leave the building before they buckled the seatbelt. Third, the battalion or duty chief commander that watches over those people, and then obviously, ultimately, the fire chief. Bert, I think what we're doing today with the safety stand-down is trying to motivate the fire service at all levels, from the firefighter to the chief of department, to do the right things because it's the right thing to do so that we can stop burying so many of our brother and sister firefighters. And doing that is so much more important and more productive than picking up a bigger stick, I think, to beat people over the head for not doing things right.
Sure. If I can just do a follow-up with you, Bob, we know from the military system that if there's a soldier killed like in a training activity and there's neglect identified, that burden goes all the way to the top of that command, and sometimes it's a career-ending accident. Will that ever take place in the fire service?
I think it has taken place and will continue to take place. Many a chief of department has been terminated because of things going wrong in an incident or on duty and so forth, but what we're saying today is that it has to start from the firefighter himself or herself looking in the mirror that has to do the right thing and not continually test the system, and it has to be the company officer ensuring, as I said, that the unit doesn't go out the door unless compliance is being done. and all the way right up to the fire chief. And yes, all should share the responsibility should something go wrong.
Okay, let me ask you for a follow-up there, Billy. We heard from Chief DePauli, the president of the International Association of Fire Chiefs, that if somebody in your department, heaven forbid, dies in the line of duty, they're going to be looking for some heads to roll at the top of the organization. How would you respond to that?
Every call I go to, I go with that in mind. And to tell you, I'm not scared to death sometimes would be a lie. I'm concerned. I'm overly cautious with my personnel to make sure that they are doing the right thing. Now, the primary issue is getting them home. I'm not worried about some attorney or somebody coming after me. My goal, I'm more fearful of having to go pick up some young wife or some young husband whose firefighter was just killed. And if he's killed for valid reasons, that's one thing. But if he or she is killed for what I would call a stupid reason, such as we ran him over or didn't have seatbelts on, or some of those kind of deaths, I'd have a lot of trouble living with that. I would deal with the attorneys later. But to answer the question, absolutely, we have to be held accountable, from the lieutenant who refuses to enforce the seatbelt law. If the lieutenant pulls out or the captain pulls out on engine 49 and they go to a call and there's an accident, the firefighter loses his life because they failed to enforce the seatbelt law, yes, as Chief DePauli and Bob said, it does start with the firefighter. But in the event the firefighter chooses not to follow the policy, that's the officer's job to enforce those policies. Basically, you're a law enforcement officer, and unfortunately, a lot of officers don't like doing that.
Okay, thanks, Billy. Ron, the next question is for you. Ron Sarnicky, the executive director of the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. Ron, one of the toughest questions you ever have to face is if a mother were to ask you, why did my child die in a line of duty? How do you answer them?
That is a tough question from the standpoint of the sacrifices that firefighters make. When the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation talks to parents, try to find out the circumstances related to the death, and I think we all know that there are some circumstances that these deaths are going to happen, but there are so many that are preventable. And deal with the heart attack issues and the vehicle accident issues alone, it's tough to say to a mom that your child, you know, died because of a rollover, because they weren't wearing a seatbelt in their personal vehicle, or that, you know, they were in a situation where there was lack of control or failure to apply standards and regulations. And sometimes there isn't an easy answer because of the fact that it's so tragic in the occurrence. But to bring the point home, you know, is that we need to do everything we can to make sure that the senseless deaths, such as what was referred to with Grady Burke down in Houston, you know, the senseless death of a firefighter, those are the ones we've got to focus in on. And I think the stand down is a good way to bring attention to all of that.
Thanks, Ron.
Hey, Bert.
Yes, go ahead.
Let me just jump on one more thing. You know, I was talking to a Metro chief a couple of months ago, and he said, Billy, I can't get my firefighters to wear their seatbelts. I'm not sure what the problem is here. There has to be, I mean, I'm not for firing and shooting and killing everybody, getting rid of everybody and doing your job. But how about the day you start the job, you're told if you fail to wear your seatbelt, you get fired if you're caught. I mean, period. If you're going to lose your job, or, you know, when we did the meeting in Tampa, the comment was, how about if a firefighter loses his life in the line of duty because he didn't put a seatbelt on, the family doesn't get the benefits? Well, that's pretty radical, and that's pretty wild, but maybe that solves the problem.
And I think that, I got to say that I agree with that, and I think that Billy's touching on is a critical point, is that we have been preaching to the fire service for years, but we also got to make sure we're reaching out to the family, because that could have the biggest impact. And the reason I say that is, Alan Brunicini has a favorite story that he tells from time to time. He had one of his EMS personnel who just continued to drive fast, was involved in accidents, had been through the disciplinary process, and they were taking appropriate internal steps to correct that. But when he had his next issue, he was summoned to Chief Brunicini's office, and sitting on the couch waiting for this firefighter was this firefighter's mom. And what Alan did was contacted this firefighter's mom and said the issues they were having. And believe it or not, the problem was corrected instantly. His mom began to harp, and mom began to make a difference. And sometimes that's what we need, is that wake-up call, because unfortunately, the members in our organizations, you know, think it isn't going to happen to me. I'm going to, you know, you like fighting routine, testosterone, whatever else you want to characterize that, that not thinking about that it could happen to me, we need to ensure there's a wake-up call. And that's an example of how he did it.
Excellent idea. Maybe we should put mothers and grandmothers on all disciplinary boards from now on.
Well, you know, you look at the success of Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. That has changed our country and the philosophy about the use of alcohol in driving vehicles.
Absolutely.
And what better way than to send this message right clearly home, because that's the other piece. If we can't get firefighters to do it for themselves, we have to get them, and I hate to steal your line, Billy, and it is a Billy Goldfinger line, we got to do it for the families.
Maybe we start an association called Families Against Dead Firefighters.
Bird, you know, it's an important issue they're bringing up here, because we keep talking about the person most responsible for your safety is the one that looks at you in the mirror. The problem we have is the impact on families is so significant. And when a firefighter doesn't take personal responsibility for making themselves safe and doing the simple things we're asking them to do, we need to explain to them or show them somehow the impact that their death or serious injury is going to have on their family, you know, their wife and their kids or their husband or their parents.
Billy, here's a question for you.
Okay.
It goes away from the heartstring kind of thing. How much money is it going to cost to reduce our line of duty deaths and injury by 50%?
Really, I don't think it's going to cost us all have a lot of money at all. If we start looking at the physical fitness issue, if we look at the physicals, and the chiefs and the captains and the lieutenants get dead serious about enforcing the driving policies and the seatbelt policies, you'll solve the problem. And I don't think it's going to cost, look at any one fire department. It's not going to cost anything if the members commit to losing a few pounds, to getting a little bit better condition, a little bit better shape. Odds are they could probably get physicals. They could probably get a grant to get their physicals if they don't have the money to get physicals. If not, I'm confident any local health department would conduct some basic physicals for any fire department. So there's no cost there or little cost. And the driving policy, it doesn't cost anything to have your officers do their jobs. That's one of our biggest problems. Our lieutenants, our captains, and our chiefs are not doing their jobs, because when we get promoted, we forget we can't be their friends anymore. And it's a real difficult situation.
Chief Paulson, if I can come back to you, thank goodness for the grants that are available to fire departments. How can we get the grant money to be focused on reducing our terrible death and injury statistics?
Well, first of all, I think you need to go back to what Billy said, because Billy's right on target. It doesn't cost anything to buckle your seatbelt. It doesn't cost anything to stop before you go through a red light. It doesn't cost anything to slow down even when you're going through an intersection with a green light. It doesn't cost anything to go out and jog every afternoon. It doesn't cost anything to watch what you eat. And those are the things that are killing our firefighters primarily. So to say that we have to depend on the grants to reduce our firefighter fatalities, we could reduce our firefighter fatalities by 50% in just a couple years, just by doing some very basic, simple things to take care of ourselves. You know, I go back to personal responsibility again. You know, firefighting is a stressful job. Like I said earlier, it's a physically demanding job. So we have to take a little bit more care of ourselves than the general population. When that bell goes off and that adrenaline goes up, it has an impact on your body. So we can't sit around like some other people can and continue to have clean arteries and a clear mind. We have to work, you know, work at it more than other people do. But that's the kind of job we're in. So I would say that, you know, Billy's right on target. I don't think there's that much money required.
Super, thank you. Here's a question to all four on my first panel, and it is kind of goes to the philosophical aspect of our culture. Here's the question: some of our highest recognitions at the national and local level go for acts of valor. When you review the cases many times, safety standards, training standards, and SOPs were being violated. Does this practice impact on our ability to make fire safety mission critical for the fire service? Ron, how would you respond to that?
I would say absolutely, and I think that's part of the culture that we're trying to change. And I'll revert back to when I was in Prince George's County, Maryland, as the fire chief. That was one of the things that we changed in our Valor Award process. I mean, it seemed like everybody was getting a gold medal of our applicants. And when you would go through and really look at the cases, you would find out that some of these people had violated a half a dozen general orders. And we took a hard line and said, you know what, you've done some things that may have saved a life or may have made a difference in the outcome of the fire. But to get there, you jeopardized yourself and your crew significantly. We're not going to award you a Medal of Valor. And I think that that's part of that positive step our leadership has to take to set the example. And we got to start from the very beginning and changing this culture of, you know, run in, you know, full speed ahead and not worry about anything. And that's what we have happening from time to time.
Billy, how do you see that same question or Ron's answer from your perspective?
There's going to be, let me just comment, there's going to be a lot of people listening to this show thinking, well, what do they know? They're sitting behind desks, they're chiefs, they're retired. Make no mistake about it, between Bob, Dave, Ron, myself, and yourself, Bert, there's a lot of fire experience. We have a whole bunch of burned up helmets hanging in our office. So we're not guys that have not been to fires, and some of us are still going to fires. So I don't want people to think that, what do they know? So with that said, it depends. There will be on occasion where fire companies pull up on a scene, there are people trapped, there's good indications that the firefighters can make a difference. The firefighters will go in, one of them may lose their life and save a life, and they may have broken some policies to do it, but it depends. Generally, I agree with Ron, but like anything in our business, it's not blanket. Each case has to be looked at. I don't want anyone listening to our show today to think for a second that we're not acknowledging that there is a percentage of very heroic firefighters that have died in the attempt to save other people's lives, including their own brothers and sisters. It's the unfortunate deaths we're talking about, the heart attack ones where we knew this person was going to have a heart attack. It's the apparatus ones where we know this person drives like an idiot, but we refuse to do anything about it. Those are the ones we're focused on today. So if we're talking about policy and procedures being broken and a firefighter dying because of it, that alone, that's a big problem, and they shouldn't be acknowledged. If anything, maybe they should be getting reprimanded. But don't forget that there are those cases, those fires and emergencies that all of our personnel go to where they may have to break a policy in order to save a life. And to that I would say, be sure you can justify it.
Now, Chief Paulson, you were chief of one of the largest departments in the country. I mean, how did you address this issue when you were still wearing the five trumpets?
Well, it even started back when I didn't even have a bugle, when I was a firefighter. My philosophy has been that all of the rules and regulations and policies we set down are guidelines to keep you safe, to make sure you perform accurately and like you're supposed to. However, when you get on a fire scene, there are going to be times when you have to act outside of policy. Don't misread what I'm saying. That's where the experience and training comes in that company officer. Those company officers that have been on the job a long time, that have been well-trained and they know their stuff, they know when you have to violate policy to get the job done, and that's what you have to depend on. So I think Billy's right. We have policies in place for a particular reason, but when you get on a fire scene and things are happening and you have an opportunity or your crew has an opportunity to make a difference, sometimes you have to take that chance and do it. But it has to be a significant event, and you have to be sure that your crew is still going to be safe when you make those decisions.
Thanks, Chief. And Bob DiPoli, I'll put you on the line because the International Association of Fire Chiefs, you do give out some awards for valor. How do you make sure that you're not rewarding incorrect behavior?
Well, I think that all three of the previous answers are all good answers, and it comes down to the root of the reason why we're having this stand down today to raise awareness and to try to change the culture. And I think part of changing the culture, too, is to take a look and to separate the fine line that divides life safety from property preservation. Are we losing people needlessly, saving buildings that insurance companies are going to pay to rebuild? Or is it going after the baby that's stuck up in the bedroom when you arrive on the scene off duty before a piece of equipment arrives and before you have protective clothing and the protection of a line and everything else? They're very difficult decisions that have to be made by individuals case by case, but the overarching thing of the stand down is to try to raise awareness and the change culture, because we simply cannot continue to bury 100-plus of our own every year and go on like this. It's just unconscionable. Even to lose one person on something that could have been prevented is unconscionable. So we're conducting the stand-down today to raise awareness of the need for increased vigilance towards firefighter safety.
Thanks, Bob. The next question for the first panel is, do we send mixed messages related to safety as mission critical? For example, you must be out of the fire station in 60 seconds, and then the argument is, well, that doesn't give me enough time to get dressed. or you can violate the two-in and two-out rule if you think someone's inside, but how often do we use that as an excuse when we really don't know if there's somebody inside? Or the idea is, hey, if I'm late for work, I know I'm going to be disciplined, but nothing ever happens to me if I violate safety rules and regulations. Bob, how would you respond to that notion?
Well, again, I think that the stand-down is to celebrate safe operations and motivate firefighters to do the right things. I think that, yes, you can safely get out of the station in 60 seconds if you put your seatbelt on the way out the door. Yes, there's good reason to punish people that don't come to work on time, because that in itself is a safety violation. If you're missing from your shift and the piece of apparatus has to go out the door short-staffed in spite of the efforts of a chief to properly staff that piece of equipment, But it comes down, I think, again, to trying to get the firefighter to do the right thing, and a lot more is going to be accomplished by everyone cooperating and trying to concentrate on these things as opposed to swinging the big stick and looking at the punishment side in all of these issues.
Along the same line, Billy, if I can ask you, do you see some conflict in terms of what we consider mission critical compared to safety versus speed?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's some fire departments out there where the firefighters will be reprimanded or suspended because the chief's car wasn't waxed properly or they didn't mow the lawn at headquarters. But if a crew goes in without wearing air packs or, you know, the driver drives like an idiot, the chief's afraid to take action on it. We need one set of standards at any fire department. And the problem is, in our nation, there's so many different departments doing things so many different ways. It comes down, and I'm not blaming at all. My heroes in this job are the company officers. Our lieutenants, our captains, your fire department, my fire department, they're the ones who make the difference. So whether it's lateness, whether it's somebody driving like an idiot, or whatever the case may be, a good, strong lieutenant who's been through a process that allows to test for that right person to be able to have that, kind of have the guts to do the job, that solves most of these problems, Bert.
Ron, if you know a little bit, if you can talk for a moment about how the Firefighter Prevention Initiative is going to help the local officer deal with this conflicting mission critical idea of safety versus all the excuses we come up with for not being safe.
Well, I think that part of the idea is that the line of duty death initiatives are designed to really address that whole array. All 16 of the initiatives are looking at all the pieces that are related to firefighter fatality. And with that, how it helps the local station is by part of the program is putting that materials into the fire stations so people can start talking about and thinking about those very issues. And that's what we hope to accomplish through the Everybody Goes Home program, is putting materials in the stations where the rank-and-file firefighters can make a grassroots effort to make this change. Now, what they're going to have to do, though, is when we talk about mission critical, and you talk about, you know, if you want to get into the discussions of response time and those other elements, there's a fine line there. There's a mix there. If there's an issue related to, the response time element, you know, each community has to set the standards by which the emergency service personnel have to function as. But built into that has to be the safety elements. So it isn't just a problem to push down to the station levels of saying, we want you out the door in 60 seconds, but you've got to have all your turnout gear on. It's going to take the whole management team to pull together and look at the safety elements that need to be in place and then set policies or procedures or this mission-critical functions, if you want to use that term, that coincide. So it's got to be from all aspects of the organization, all levels of the organization, in order to make a difference.
Dave, if I could put you on the spot, if you don't mind, how do you see the U.S. Fire Administration helping with this idea of making firefighter safety mission critical to everything that we do?
I think how the U.S. Fire Administration fits into this is simply what we're doing here today. Making sure that we can be the bully pulpit out there, and I'll use the word harassing officers to start thinking about this. That's what this whole stand down day is about. It's about sitting down with your crew, sitting down with your station, talking about some of these safety issues and what we can do about it. And I tell you the truth, I think Ron really hit the nail on the head. This is a top-down, bottom-up type of an issue we have to deal with. It takes everybody from the fire chief down to the recruit firefighter coming on to talk about these issues. We've put over $3 billion into fire service in the last few years.
directly to the fire service. We're buying equipment, we're buying fire trucks, we're doing health and wellness programs, we're buying self-contained breathing apparatus, everything in the world we can think of to not only help our firefighters do their job, but help them do it more safely. But all the money in the world can't fix it if you don't have a fire chief and firefighters and fire officers all committed to reducing these firefighter fatalities. That's where the bottom line is.
Right. You're absolutely right. The problem isn't just throwing money at it. The problem is making a commitment, standing up for the right thing, and then implementing it. That's the critical piece here. It isn't just dollars. It isn't just policy. It's making sure that the people that are in the leadership capacities, and that's at all levels, because that's where a lot of these issues occur, especially at the station level. That first level supervisor is in a tough spot, and that's the person that really can make and break these fire fatalities.
That's where the rubber meets the road. That's
absolutely,
right.
Absolutely. And they're the ones, I think, that have the most impact on the day-to-day. But they have to have the support of management, and Billy set a good example. If the department disciplines you because you didn't wax the carburetor, didn't cut the grass, but doesn't do anything when you don't wear your seatbelt, what kind of message are we sending to that first-line supervisor who's having a tough time becoming not now one of the crew, but the boss or the supervisor of that crew who lives together, sleeps together, functions together at a work scenario or a volunteer capacity, and now they've got to be the hard line and invoke policy.
Or even worse, and carry that one step further, you have a lieutenant, a captain, or a chief officer who wants to take action on an employee to correct their behavior, and it's not back from the top.
Absolutely. And it's got to be supported, and whether it's career volunteer, a member, or an officer, people have to stand up for what they believe in, say what they know is right, and then be supported by the organization in getting there.
All right, gentlemen, if I could ask you all just to give us your final thoughts on the issue of fire service safety culture. Dave?
Well, like I said earlier, firefight is a dangerous job. It's a physically demanding job. The fire administration is absolutely committed to the safety of all first responders. We have a lot of stuff on our website. You can call our office, and we'll get you any information that we possibly can to give you the tools you need to make sure you have a safe operation. But it can't just happen from the fire administration. We've got a whole bunch of organizations out there that are really committed to this. We've got the International Firefighters out there, the National Fire Chiefs, the National Volunteer Fire Council, and I can go on and on and on. The National Fallen Firefighters is absolutely taking a lead role in this whole issue of firefighter fatalities. It's going to take all of us together, plus the commitment of the fire chief and the firefighters to make it happen.
Thanks, Dave. Bob DiPoli?
Yes, Brett. Again, I think that we all have to stop and take a moment and look in the mirror and realize that all firefighter safety begins with each person individually, and it's about doing the right thing. I'm going to take it a little bit different road. I think it's about taking care of yourself. I just retired at 56 years old, and the last several years put myself on a healthy diet and went up to the gym and exercised, and it's amazing the way that was received by the troops to see the old man up there on the treadmill along with the young pups. I think that it's knowing when it's time to pack it in and get out. I've been to Emmitsburg for 14 line of duty death ceremonies each year, and it's just a shame when you have to read in these narratives that somebody's 89 years old and died on the line of duty. An 89-year-old is no business on the fire ground in my home state. Massachusetts at 65, it's time to go. I went at 56. I thought that was time to go before I become a statistic. So I think it starts at the top down, setting a good example. And my message today to everybody is to take good care of yourself, because a lot of people depend on you, your family, your brother and sister firefighter, your community, and everybody else.
Thanks, Bob. Ron Sarnicky.
Thanks, Bert. A couple of things. First of all, I do believe that the goals that we've set out, a 25% reduction in 5 years and a 50% reduction in 10 years, are attainable. And the only way they're going to be attainable, though, is that every single member of the fire service understands that it is their duty and their responsibility to be accountable for themselves. And if that means speaking up, if that means noticing unsafe practices, if that means getting involved, getting engaged, doing the right things for the right reasons, then so be it. And I think that that's the way that we're going to make a difference, is by making sure people understand, whether it's the cultural attack or the issues related to traditions, is that what we've been doing each year is killing 100 firefighters, 100 plus firefighters, and we can't continue down that same road. And so even if it's just first steps, starting with just one initiative, or all 16, whatever that person and that organization decides, it has to be every single member's duty and responsibility.
Thanks, Ron. And Billy, you get to wrap up this first panel.
Yeah, I guess to sum it up, the last thing we want to do is, like we saw on Ladder 49, then John Travolta got in the car and went and picked the family up because another firefighter died. And we want to avoid that. And as dramatic as that is, it really comes down to that. It's tough enough to go for that ride if a firefighter dies for a valid reason where he or she was attempting to save a life. But to go for that ride because we ran him over while we were backing the apparatus over, or because he fell out of the rig or she fell out of the rig because he didn't have a seatbelt on, I don't know how you begin talking to the family about that when we own that responsibility. So, you know, in that manner, if you want some motivation, there's some motivation to avoid going for that ride to pick anybody up and take them and try and explain to them how somebody died. If they die heroically, that's one thing, but it's tough to call a hero someone who got run over by our own apparatus backing them up. So I'd say that's one way to focus. As far as the healthy eating and the exercise and all that other stuff, it really is tough. As someone who's been fat most of my life, and only in the last couple of years have I gotten serious, and I'm still fat, but I'm less fat than I was, I guess, talking to those out there that have the weight problem. It isn't easy, but it's worth it. I mean, picture your family, your friends, your wife, your kids, your husband standing around at your funeral, you know, because you died on duty, although we call it a line of duty death. You know, you're sitting in front of the TV and a drop of a heart attack. That's hardly a heroic way to go. So it starts, as all the other guys on the panel here said today, it starts with personal responsibility, but it also comes down to officers enforcing the policy. And there's a lot of great company officers out there, but there's a lot of great company and chief officers that are afraid to enforce the policies because they're afraid they're not going to be liked. Well, they need to wake up and realize they're not liked anyway. They're not to be liked. That's not their job. I'll like you. The rest of us will like you. We'll send you Christmas cards, whatever you want. But you got to enforce the policies, or more of our own are going to continue to die.
Thank you, Billy. I want to thank all my first panel, Dave Paulson, U.S. Fire Administrator, Bob DiPoli, President of the International Association of Fire Chiefs, Ron Sarnicky, Executive Director of the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation, and Billy Goldfeder, Deputy Fire Chief, Loveland, Ohio. Thank you, gentlemen. You are listening to Leadership on the Line. I'm Dr. Burton Clark. The topic today is about our fire service safety culture. The next panel of leaders have to deal with our safety culture and safety behavior every day at the fire station and on a fire ground. It's my honor to introduce them. Fire Chief Tom Stanton is the Chief of the Law Volunteer Fire Department in Maryland. Tom is also the president of Stanton Associates, a fire protection engineering firm. One of their major clients is the Department of Defense. Welcome, Chief Stanton. Next, we have Captain Raul Angulo with the Seattle, Washington Fire Department. Raul is a nationally known author and serves on the Fire Department Instructors Conference Board of Directors. Next is Captain Leonard Carmichael with the Trenton, New Jersey Fire Department. Leonard is also an adjunct faculty member at the National Fire Academy. And filling out the next panel is Lieutenant Brent Battle with the Burlington, Texas Fire Department. Brent is also the president of TrainingDivision.com, an international emergency services distance learning company. Welcome to you all. Gentlemen, you've had the opportunity to listen to the big guys, the leaders, talk about our safety culture. And now the question is, does anything that you heard in the first panel discussion relate to you, your company, or your department? Tom, I'll start with you.
Yes, it does. And we are, of course, at this level, we're dealing with the day-to-day operations of the fire and rescue service, and as you would say, the boots on the street, and where we have many, many things happening both in the station, on the apparatus, responding emergency, non-emergency, training activities inside and outside the house. And just covering that gambit, you have a variety of different safety issues that you have to deal with.
personnel wise, starting with the individual. I do agree with the original panel that talked about the firefighter. Firefighter safety begins with each individual and works its way up through the ranks of responsibility with the lieutenants and the captains and on up at the chief levels. And it's got to be enforced. It's got to be brought on board as a requirement, and it's got to be something that we have to carry as chief officers. And I do agree with the original panel's top-down, bottom-up philosophy where we had to deal with it. I do believe that it part of our job at the operational level is that we have to have a cultural change, a mindset change to the to where we're at and where we're going. It's much like the age-old attitude the fire service has had. The fire service has this Rambo attitude. We've got a mix of people that have going into this field have got that kind of an approach to things. And that mindset's got to change. We've got to focus on what's really killing our firefighters, which is the accidents and the heart attacks and so forth. So I think that we need to really emphasize the importance to the safety procedures at every facet of our operation.
Thanks, Chief. Brent, if I may pick on you a little bit, you're kind of the rookie on this call, being the lieutenant and probably the youngest of all of us. We envy you. How does all this stuff from the gray-haired people, how does that impact to you, your company, and your department?
Well, several of the chiefs from the first panel said several times that it's the officer's job to enforce the policy. And I think that, you know, that at our level, my level in particular, that's really where it starts. I think it was one of your letters, Dr. Clark, that was talking about how some company officers hold their firefighters more accountable for coming to work late than wearing their seatbelts. And I just think we need to change that and, you know, raise firefighter safety to the highest level. And once again, I think it starts at the company officer level, you know, hold our guys accountable for safety violations.
Thanks, Brent. Leonard, you've heard all these good ideas and suggestions coming from on high in Washington, D.C., if you will. You know, how do you translate that into your, because I think you're on a truck company now. How do you translate that into your truck company operations?
Well, one of the biggest things that I've always tried to preach is number one, when you're a company officer, whether you're a lieutenant or a captain, you're a role model, okay? And what I mean by that is simply this. How can I discipline somebody for not wearing a seatbelt if I don't do it? How can I discipline somebody for not wearing their gear or SCBA if I don't do it? And I know they talked about having to start from the top down and the bottom up, but one of the biggest things is, as a company officer, I asked you to all the other members on the panel, if you were to do that and discipline somebody, do you have support from your department to back you up? Because the other thing that comes into play, if you hold a guy accountable and now all of a sudden now he has to go before charges or whatever your disciplinary actions may be, you may have another intervening medium called the union who will try to circumvent that safety culture that we're trying to change. So there's a lot of variables that come into play. I think the panel that spoke before had a lot of good things to say about safety. They had a lot of good things to say about a whole lot of things. But the bottom line is it has to start from the top because of the fact that even though we are the company officers, if we get no support from the top down, then it doesn't matter what we're going to do in order to make a difference. It's just going to be what it is.
Thanks, Leonard. And Raul, you're probably the farthest away from Washington, D.C., being out in Seattle, Washington. Does anything that goes on in Washington, D.C. about our safety culture make it to your engine company?
It does. I'd like to bring up some different perspectives, though, that I wrote listening to the chiefs. When thinking about trying to change the culture, I'm going to be on the other side of the fence on this, and I'm going to say I don't know if you really can change that gung-ho Rambo culture. But let me clarify it by saying this. When we look at the fatalities, all right, and we talked about heart attacks and vehicle accidents being number one and two. Well, that's not a Rambo buckaroo attitude. Okay, so those are things that are controllable. And those have to be addressed through influence. That leadership has to exert some type of influence to get them to buy into this safety culture, not just discipline alone. Because the flat across discipline, especially if it's harsh or petty, builds resentment. Nobody likes to be disciplined. But let me make my point on the Rambo issue. How many firefighters, and this is what we need to examine, how many firefighters are actually getting killed for Rambo, Buckaroo-type actions? And I don't think that there's that many. I think that if you're pulling ceilings on the floor below, and that's part of a safe operation, and the ceiling collapses on you, you're not projecting a Rambo attitude. You're doing your job. From day one, we're saying, get in there. You got to get in there because this is a tough and dangerous job. But for me, I think the inexcusable reasons, and this hear me out, Bert, this is the number one thing. I think the problem lies in sending firefighters into buildings that no longer have any savable value. We got to quit sending firefighters into loser buildings. Those are the deaths that we can't justify. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. I appreciate that. Thank you, Brad.
I'll give you two quick examples. In Houston, there was a McDonald's where we lost two firefighters, and the fire was in the middle of the night. Okay, so that building no longer had value. 33's had the same type of McDonald's fire, and we made a great save. We went in there and put the fire out. Bottom line, both McDonald's were torn down and rebuilt. So what did we actually save? Absolutely nothing.
And the only people who were at risk were the firefighters that went into the building.
That's right.
Yeah, a real problem. Okay, here's the next question for all of you. And this is just something I've jumped on, you know, comparing how we as a culture completely understand that there are consequences for failure to attend on time and consequences for not meeting our participation requirements in the volunteer service. So to change our safety culture, you know, we may need to start disciplining for safety violations. You know, will each one of you be able to do that? Will your fire department back you up, and what will be the results? Raul?
Again, I'm going to go back to everything is relational. You're building relationships. I already have the authority of a captain, but if I'm going to be petty about my discipline, that's going to build resentment in my troops. I don't need to exercise my influence in petty discipline and then try and win them over on something as critical as safety. I have to build a relationship in little things so that they know I do care about them to get the buy-in on a safety message that's really going to demonstrate my concern for their safety. Otherwise, I'm sending mixed messages. And vice versa with the administration. When officers get disciplined for petty issues, and they have to endure that, and then they expect us to be part of the team. I mean, you know, discipline is always difficult to take. So, but company officers and firefighters are stand-up people, and I think that they'll accept the responsibility when they see that it's just taking responsibility for your actions. I don't see a lot of firefighters shirking their responsibilities for that. So, again, we need to build a relationship and not waste our time on the petty issues so that we can get the buy-in and the cooperation on the things that really matter in the fire service.
Leonard, what do you think? Raul says that discipline is not really the way to get people to be safe. He wants to be a good role model. Is discipline one of the things that you think you may have to be able to use?
Well, the one thing I'll say about Raul's statements, he made a couple of really good observations there. One of the biggest things is that I've always tried to be by, and I tell people this all the time, if I had to choose between being your friend or your boss, I'd rather be your boss. Because, unfortunately, we have some firefighters out there, and we talk about this safety culture, who have gotten away from, well, I need to put my SCBA on, I need to put my gear on. Those things are very important to me. However, if we have a person who, say, maybe forgot to, sweep the kitchen or something like that, that can be handled very easily by bringing a guy in the office and saying, listen, you know, this is what we need to do, you know, this and that. Normally it's some excuse and it's taken care of. However, I will say that we do have some people in this country of all ranks who commit statutory gross negligence. If you know the law, you may have a state, local, federal law stating, I'll give you an example, the use of the incident management system. We have some departments right now that still do not use the incident management system. However, they look great on paper. And one of the things that a lot of the first panel talked about is when are we going to start holding these people of all ranks, okay, accountable for killing firefighters? As far as the discipline issue is concerned, I honestly think discipline can be used as a very positive tool to set forth that change in our safety culture. However, I also agree with Raul stating that, you know, there's certain times when you can do it and there's certain times when you don't have to because it starts to get petty.
Brent, what's been your experience with this whole concept of disciplining or holding people accountable, not only on your regular job as a lieutenant, but also in your company world where you're responsible for those rookies that go through your rookie school?
Well, I think it's probably the single toughest thing that we do, having to enforce discipline. But there is a line that you need to let everybody know, as far as safety goes, that you're going to uphold that, you know. And I think that once the firefighters realize that we're being, you know, a stickler regarding the safety rules, but, you know, they'll realize it's for their own benefit. So,
thank you. And Tom, almost 80% of the fire service is volunteer. Do you think that discipline needs to be a tool in the volunteer arsenal to make sure people comply with all the safety standards?
Yes, I do. I think that, but as mentioned earlier by others on the panel, that discretion is very important, especially as a chief officer or a command officer, to use discretion when using discipline. But I found, at least in my 31 years in the field, that personnel in the fire service appreciate and respect having the discipline in the structure and as what they've always called the quasi-military configuration of the fire service. In my experience in the volunteer side, and I've worked in a combination system for 31 years, that where you don't have the discipline, where you have a free-for-all or a Wild West kind of a approach to things with no rules, you have the problems safety-wise. You also have the lack of respect and the lack of functioning as a team. And I think that discipline is extremely important. I think that discretion is very important as far as the level of what you discipline for and what you don't. You don't want to be petty, as has been mentioned before. But as I mentioned earlier, I mentioned the attitude, the approach of the Sentinel Fire Service. I threw a Rambo term out there, but kind of my experience is that we attract in the Fire Rescue Service people that have a bulletproof mentality, that they want to get out there and just go blazing saddle like Ladder 49 or Backdraft. And that they see that and they want to attract to that. And I think that what we as leaders and officers need to control and focus that energy toward a safe operation as best we can. And like was mentioned before, in a different way, but my approach is we lead by example as officers. We set the example, as was mentioned before. You wear your gear. You make sure you seatbelt. You make sure you follow the laws when you drive emergency. You make sure that you're wearing the proper SCBA and other protective equipment when you go into the hot zones and the warm zone. And then we need to be consistent when we enforce the discipline. We can't play the game of, well, I don't like this guy or that guy or whatever, or this guy looks different, acts different. We've got to be consistent, and we've got to be fair, and I think they find a lot more positive responses from the troops when we do. And I like to look at it from a positive, optimistic approach. We're a team, and we value each individual's position and their safety, and that we have to take care of each other, look at each other's back, and work as a team and cover for each other, such as when we go into a burning building, we always emphasize when I teach at MFRI to check each other out because you can't see whether your collar's right or not or your buttons are all up or snaps or whatever. So we always have to check each other. That team approach, that mindset that we teach for the rookies all the way up is extremely important, and we take that toward the safety as well. And I think that getting buy-in tends to help with that as well.
Thanks, Chief. I'm going to put all of you really on the line right now. How and why has your personal safety behavior changed over time? And what kind of challenges do you still face for you personally in terms of your personal behavior and what drives that? Leonard?
Well, the first thing I'm going to say, and again, I'm going to repeat this, is that the company officer definitely sets the tone. You're a role model. You're a mentor. People are looking at you at all times, whether you believe they are or not. And one of the biggest things that changed my behavior is that when I was a firefighter, I went from being one of the boys to getting one of the boys to do their job when I got promoted as a company officer. And before, I only had to worry about one person in my crew. Now I got to worry about my entire crew and other companies. So a lot of decisions that I make ultimately affect everybody on my crew and other companies operating on the fire ground. One of the biggest challenges I think we're going to have is getting the old mindset out of nothing can happen to me. I'm invincible. For some reason, when we put that gear on, we think we have a big S on our chest. And one of the things that people need to understand is this is what they talked about before. You know, we need to start exercising. We need to start eating right. We need to start having, post-incident analysis after every fire. We need to start using the incident command system, making sure we have the rapid intervention team and, accountability taken care of. So one of the challenges that I see the fire services is getting over is to basically get that safety culture in place, and also having the leadership to expand upon that and take it one step further. But if you don't adhere to this new safety challenge that we're going to do, you're going to be held accountable. And if you are held accountable, we are going to discipline you until you get it right. And I think that's some of the challenges that we're going to face in the next 10 years.
Thanks, Leonard. Brent, let me really push it for you personally. How have you changed your behavior to be more safety conscious?
When I was a rookie and first started in the fire service, I think we're all looking to try and prove ourselves, and I think that might be one of the dangerous attitudes, in the fire service. We tend to congratulate people coming out of a burning house with their shield melted off and helmet melted around their ears and gear discolored and degraded, but when we should really be asking them, did you forget to do something? Forget to put water on the fire? But I think that when I was promoted to company officer, you start looking at stuff like that, the different safety attitudes and the behaviors that are going to protect your crew. And I think as I've worked as a company officer for a while now, that you begin to pick up, on that. Someone touched that you're responsible for many people, and I think that's one of the things that has changed over time. You're much more responsible for your crew and many people's lives.
Thanks, Brent. And Tom, where are you on your safe behavior odyssey?
On my odyssey. Well, Bert, you've known me for 30 years, and I came into the system where we were still riding the back step. We still even had firefighters jump up in the hood when we had larger crews of people available. And, of course, with a variety of events that have happened over those last 30 years, we've incorporated seatbelts in the apparatus. We've gone to all closed cabs. We've changed our procedures drastically. We've now required gear to be on before we respond, a two-in, two-out, RIT team levels. We've changed our emergency vehicle driving procedures. Accountability has been thrown in there, and liabilities has exponentially increased in the last 30 years. I look at this as a chief officer as I have an obligation, as many have come before me, that I need to step up and I need to lead by example. I need to be consistent in enforcing and encouraging on a daily basis with each of our crews to make sure that they all understand the necessities. They need to understand the fact that we're not really necessarily dying. The large percentage of people, the firefighters that are dying on the fire truck accidents. They're dying from heart attacks. They're dying from those kinds of incidents, not from the hazmat incidents, not from the major fire events and so forth, as was mentioned this morning at our association meetings by Chief Melton from Baltimore City. So we need to look at what we're doing from a safety standpoint, and we need to emphasize that. So we're going to spend the money. We're going to make the efforts. We're going to enforce it with each of our tour duties for our crews, and we're going to start with our junior officers, our unit officers, to make sure that they're enforcing these rules, and I need to get them to buy in. one way or the other. And I think one of the things we're going to do here shortly with our department is that we're going to actually get, we sat at a meeting just last week about safety, and we're going to emphasize the need for each and every officer to sign on, physically sign on to a commitment that they're going to enforce these firefighter safety procedures in many different ways. And then we're going to move on from there to each of the crews, the firefighters and the drivers, the technicians and so forth. They're all going to sign on, and we're all going to emphasize this on a weekly basis. And I think that that's the way to do it. And then I've got to beat on our officers to make sure that they step up and lead by example when it comes to safety, as well as anything and everything else that we do.
Thanks, Tom. I'm going to take it. Raul, how's your safety behavior changed over time?
I'll make these points. Again, as a lieutenant, I was trying to prove myself, and it wasn't until I made captain and I realized that I was responsible for more firefighters that it was a sobering wake-up call. But we have to look at what motivates firefighters. In the chief's segment, they were talking about, are we rewarding with medals of valor unsafe acts? Well, you know, firefighters don't make those rescues for medals. They're motivated by something else. I don't want my comments to be seen as weak on discipline. If we're motivated to be the best officer we can be, we are going to be disciplined on enforcing safety rules and regulations. We always have that legitimate power to do that. But simply writing reprimands and bringing charges on firefighters doesn't mean you're accomplishing the objective. It means you're exercising your legitimate authority, which we always have. It's not solving the problem. We have to look at what motivates firefighters. So here's how I broke it up. I broke it up into two categories. When you look at issues like the driving accidents and heart attacks related to physical fitness, you can write reprimands all you want. But if you're still fat, something else has to motivate that firefighter. You have to appeal to their discipline, to their being the weakest link in the chain that everything hinges on them. They have to be motivated to ratchet up their physical fitness because they're part of a bigger picture. That's going to be appeal. You're going to make that appeal through influence and leadership, not through writing charges.
Thank you, Raul. I want to thank my panel today, Fire Chief Tom Stanton, Laurel, Maryland, Captain Raul Angulo from Seattle, Washington, Captain Leonard Carmichael from Trenton, New Jersey, and Lieutenant Brent Batla from Burleson, Texas. As a closing comment, if you want to learn more about what type of leadership it takes to change organizational culture, you can read an excellent book on the subject by Ronald Heifetz and Marty Linsky titled Leadership on the Line, Staying Alive Through the Dangers of Leading, published by Harvard Business School. This has been Firehouse.com radio program, Leadership on the Line. I'm Dr. Burton Clark. Thank you for listening.